Hello and welcome to episode 214 of Turkey Book Talk. Thank you for listening. I'm William Armstrong here in Istanbul. Remember to follow Turkey Book Talk over at Twitter or X, Instagram and or Facebook. There's Blue Sky as well. Hello to anyone on there. In this episode, we speak to Bahar Basar. She is Associate Professor of Middle Eastern Politics at Durham University and the co-editor, along with former Turkey Book Talk guest Erdi Öztürk, of An Exodus from Turkey, Tales of Migration and Exile, published by Edinburgh University Press. Alarm about young and educated people increasingly seeking to leave the country has mounted in recent years, triggered by a combination of political and economic factors. Reports from inside and outside Turkey suggest growing numbers of people are looking for various legal and irregular routes to move out, most commonly to Europe, the US and Canada, but also elsewhere. Because of the diffuse nature of this migration, exact figures, exact estimates of numbers are very difficult to come by, but we can get some idea. Just recently, it was reported that a record number of Turkish citizens applied for asylum in the EU in 2023, up 82% from the previous year to over 100,000 applications. Indeed, at least anecdotally in my small corner of Istanbul, the trend of people looking for different paths to move away has become impossible to ignore over the last few years. Obviously, in previous decades, Turkey also experienced different waves of economically and politically motivated outward migration, affecting various different constituencies and caused by a range of other factors. Later in our conversation with Bahar Basar, we place present-day trends within that deeper context. But before we get started, let me appeal once again for support. It takes a lot of time and effort to read all these books, prepare the podcast, edit it, and put it out there into the world. And I do need listeners' support, your support, to be able to keep doing it. We launched the podcast back in 2015, giving a platform to researchers and authors working on Turkish history, politics, society, literature, and the arts. Turkey Book Talk is completely independent with no sponsorships. It depends 100% on the goodwill of listeners like you. So if you are able to support, please consider becoming a Turkey Book Talk member on Patreon. Supporting on Patreon is a nice thing to do, and it also gets you some pretty good extras. Those extras include a 35% discount on all books published in IB Taurus and Bloomsbury's Excellent Turkey and Ottoman History series. As a member, you get a special code to use at the online checkout, and you can use it to purchase any of hundreds of Turkey and Ottoman history titles, either as an old-fashioned physical book or an ebook. Turkey Book Talk members also receive a PDF transcript of every interview when the episode is published. You also get PDF transcripts of the entire archive of Turkey Book Talk interviews, including previously unpublished extras. And finally, to members, I also send links to a couple of articles related to the subject of the episode upon publication, which is ideal if you want to delve a bit deeper. To become a member, just go to Turkey Book Talk's Patreon page and pledge $3, €3, or £2.50 per episode. You can pledge more if you want, but so long as you pledge $3, €3, or £2.50 or above per episode, membership is entirely at your own discretion. It's inflation-proof, and there are no strings attached. You'll be free to sign off whenever you want. But now on to our conversation with Bahar Basar. Just a heads up before we dive in, apologies for the glitchy sound quality at my end during this conversation. There was something weird going on with the microphone that I don't quite understand. But anyway, as I said before, Bahar Basar's book looks at the current wave of migration from Turkey, with separate chapters focusing on the experiences of 21 different public figures who are today living in exile. So I started by asking her what exactly the research for the book project involved and how it came about.
As a migration scholar, I focused on waves of migration from Turkey from 60s onwards. And after the coup attempt, and especially after the peace petition, you know, we could see like there was an exodus from Turkey to different parts of the world, not just Europe, but even to South Africa, to Korea, to GCC countries, etc. So I wasn't the only one. And Dr. Erdi Öztürk also started working on these issues from a different perspective. And our research interests overlapped at some point. So it was a perfect opportunity to work together to understand this new migration waves from Turkey. You know, many media outlets talked about the number of asylum seekers or people trying to cross the Turkish-Greek border. We noticed that it was different from the other waves in the past. And many people were fleeing Turkey, if you will, for political reasons. But they had different motivations, different destinations. So we wanted to understand. We wanted to understand what it meant, because it's a significant critical juncture in Turkey's political history, one of the most significant brain drains. So in this specific book, we opted for bringing forward people's own narratives. So rather than conducting interviews and writing books and articles about people and interpreting what they said, we wanted to give a chance to their own voice. So this book is like written in an edited book format. Erde and I wrote the introduction, and then we included more than 20 interviews and used these participants' own words, own narratives, especially with regards to the definition of exile, whether they consider themselves in exile or not, how do they cope with these feelings. So most of these interviews questioned people's motivations to move out of Turkey, but at the same time gave them an opportunity to reflect on their, you know, emotional well-being. So rather than asking too many questions about Turkish politics, we also wanted to make them feel comfortable to talk about their individual lived experiences in exile. In the book, we wanted to reflect on the stories, like the narratives of intellectuals. It took us a while to decide how to name this group of people we interviewed. They were public figures, politicians, academics, journalists, and we just called them the Turkish and Kurdish intelligentsia abroad, and we also included Hayko Bağdat, so Armenian. So Turkey's intelligentsia is leaving Turkey. It's a slow migration. It's like perpetual exodus. Some of these people have already experienced exile in the past with other political turmoils in Turkey. So we thought it would be important to bring these diverse experiences to the fore and to leave a dent in the literature by taking a snapshot of the situation now. So we're not making big predictions about what will happen in the future. We're just telling people, telling the readers, okay, this is what it is now. There's an exodus from Turkey, and Turkey's intelligentsia is leaving Turkey, and this is how they are feeling now.
As you say there, the figures that you interview in the book are largely prominent names, actually, in some circles, well-known figures from media, politics, the arts. But that's obviously, as you say there, just a snapshot of a much bigger wave of migration, not just among intellectuals, but also separately among ordinary middle-class and working-class people that has kind of been gaining momentum in the last few years. And there's a kind of two-pronged migration, I suppose, you know, political motivations for many people, including the people in the book. But there's also an economic one with the recent difficulties in Turkey over the last few years. That's also pushing a different group of people out of the country. So how should we think about bringing those two together? Are they kind of two separate groups, economic migrants and political exiles? Or are the boundaries a bit more blurry, do you think?
Very interesting question. I can say that this wave of migration has not started with the coup attempt. I believe what accelerated at least the motivations to move away from Turkey started with the Gezi protests. There are a lot of people leaving Turkey at the moment. We mostly talk about, you know, exiles or people who had to leave because of political motivations. And some people, you know, come to the UK with Ankara agreement, so they are considered as economic migrants, or it's considered as a lifestyle decision. But overall, when you look at the big picture, you see that, of course, the democratic backsliding in Turkey is pushing people away. Economic instability is pushing people away. For some migrants, what's the most important thing is that Turkey is losing its secular identity. For others, you can see that some people think there are too many Syrian refugees in Turkey and it doesn't feel like home anymore. You know, it's not always like human rights activists who move away. People have the different motivations. For others, it's about saving the next generation. So, you know, they think that Turkey is too polarized. Although they are not politically active themselves, they feel that it's not going in the right direction, and they want to prepare a better future for their children. We keep reading about different profiles, right? So we had people who had to leave, like the Gulen movement members or journalists, academics, academics, Kurdish politicians. They had to leave because of political reasons. But there are others, especially from specific professional groups like doctors, IT engineers. They are leaving in massive numbers. And there are many reasons behind this. This could be corruption in Turkey. This could be instability economically and politically. Some people feel like they do not culturally belong there. If you look at some of the public opinion polls that appeared, especially before the elections, you see that 60-70% of young people plan to leave Turkey if they had a chance to live abroad, etc. So there is a trend. But when we interviewed people, because our project was not confined to Turkey's intelligentsia, but we interviewed a broader group of people, and you see that the seeds of this idea of migrating outside Turkey is planted already around, are already planted around the Gezi protests. But for some people, making that hard decision takes ages. So they either think about migrating and expect an opportunity to do that. Some wait for a sign, you know, I'll wait for until the next election. So if this party wins again, I'm leaving. Or others just keep making job applications and wait for this. But we see a very diverse profile, which is one of the most important differences, I think, between the previous waves and this one. This is a very heterogeneous wave. People from different walks of life, different ages, different professional groups, different classes. So I think that's what makes the recent exodus more interesting for academics to study.
Yeah, the atmosphere, I feel, you know, living here, the atmosphere, there was a shift maybe a few years ago. I, you know, noticed it shortly after the coup attempt, obviously. That really did change things in 2016. But after then, it was all one-way traffic, really. And it seemed like from that point, really, every other conversation seemed to be with someone who was planning to move abroad or looking at least for potential ways to move abroad. It's almost weird when you meet somebody who is not engaging in such a search these days. And that's striking because it wasn't always the case. You know, when I first moved here in 2009, 2010, it almost seemed like the opposite was happening. There were a lot more cases of people moving back from abroad, trying to build something here. And there was a lot of talk at the time, news reports about almost a reverse migration that was going on. And, you know, just thinking about the shift in that space of just over 10 years, it's a really sharp shift, isn't it? And it's quite a depressing one, really, when you stand back and look at it.
I totally agree with you. I was conducting my fieldwork for my PhD in the early 2010s. And there was this hope for peace, you know, the Turkish-Kurdish peace process was ongoing and people had high hopes about Turkey and democratization, etc. Despite the secular concerns, there were hopes for a potential return for people. I remember having conversations with members of the Kurdish diaspora who have been in exile for many years. They were saying, like, you know, finally after 20-30 years we might be able to return if there's peace. So there was definitely this kind of a trend, almost like a reverse migration, and things have changed drastically. I mean, if you look now to the statistics, you know, just in 2019 the number of people who migrated from Turkey to somewhere else was around 80,000. If you look at asylum applications, they skyrocketed, especially after 2016. In 2019, the number of people who left Turkey were around 80,000. The year before, it was more than 100,000. So just after the coup attempt, the asylum applications in European countries, especially in Germany, skyrocketed. So people are leaving. They want to leave. And those who can, they leave. And some others are still contemplating, and there are some things that are holding them back. And this could be, for example, the responsibility to take care of the family, etc. Maybe lack of linguistic skills, which are required to survive outside Turkey. It could be that they really want to stay and fight. We see people like that, so they don't want to move away and they want to stay in Turkey and continue being an activist, although it's like one of the hardest times to be an activist in Turkey at the moment. So motivations change, and the more we interview people, the more we found out that individual stories are really interesting, and you cannot make generalizations, sweeping generalizations about the current exodus. Everybody has their own motivations. What is really worrying is that this is a big brain drain. So it's not just about intellectuals, but highly skilled people who are well-educated, who could actually contribute to Turkey's economy. They are leaving in massive numbers. And the question is that whether the government is doing enough to keeping them in the country, or is it okay for the government to lose people who might be potential dissidents?
One of the things as well, particularly in the last couple of years with the economic crisis, that I've noticed speaking to people is that there's also a shift. You know, people who are basically apolitical are also now seeking paths out in many cases. It's really, I've noticed with the economy and, you know, people's struggles around housing and making a living and it looking like there's no way back from that, that kind of compounds all the other difficulties professionally, etc. And obviously, a lot of these people who are moving out, they have views about things and maybe they're not very happy about the way politically the country is going. But that's not the prime motivation for a lot of people moving out. It's really, particularly in the last maybe 2 or 3 years, it seems to be the economy that people talk about perhaps more than 5 years ago when, you know, it was a political exodus after the coup attempt particularly. Do you think there is a kind of distinction there over the last 5 years where, you know, maybe there was a period of particularly harsh repression maybe 6 or 7 years ago, but now the majority of people moving out are actually motivated by more economic factors?
Yes, I definitely agree with you. Most of the time when we talk about the exodus, you know, people tend to just focus on the post-coup attempt period, and you imagine people trying to pass the Maritsa River by swimming, losing their lives, trying to flee Turkey, etc. But if you look at the big picture, I think the exodus of people who were politically oppressed in Turkey is now less significant when you look at the profile of the people you just mentioned. Especially young people are leaving. And many surveys before and after the election showed that young people do not want to stay in Turkey. Even those who vote for the AKP or MHP plan to leave. So there are a lot of reasons for that. Not many people feel directly politically oppressed in Turkey either, you know. But many people are tired of this polarization, political polarization, not being able to talk about anything else but politics everywhere they go, not feeling comfortable about their lifestyles. And it's not just for the seculars or Kemalists, it's for everybody. You know, you don't feel just comfortable among even friends anymore. This is what I've been hearing in interviews, but also in my private life in Turkey. So the issues that you mentioned, housing, economy in general, many young people especially, they feel stuck in a situation where they cannot move forward with their lives. There is a lack of meritocracy. So this came out a lot during our interviews, especially in Portugal. Like there was this guy who graduated from ITU, a system engineer, and he just moved to Portugal and started working in a pizza shop because he thought that he would be happier, and he was happier. And the reason was that he never trusted the system in Turkey anymore. He thought that even if he worked somewhere, there's no meritocracy, he wouldn't earn enough to live his life. So he started from scratch in Portugal in a pizza shop. And he's not the only one. I mean, if you're following news about Turks in England, you see like a software engineer came and started selling waffles in a weekend market somewhere in London, and he's happier. So we hear these kind of stories more and more because people just want sometimes peace and joy. And this is not only because they are political activists, but because it's just, you know, for self-survival, for mental health and well-being. I started following with Erdi this Facebook groups for newcomers, and you would be surprised how they mushroomed suddenly after 2016-17, newcomers to Germany, newcomers to Berlin, newcomers to London, etc. And it's just Turkish and Kurdish members mostly talking about practicalities of migration. So where do I go and register, etc. And all, most of these groups had these warnings: you cannot talk about politics here. This is not for this is not a group for political activism. And I have been part of some WhatsApp groups. You know, people who moved to Portugal, they ask questions to each other. And during the election time in May, some people made some comments, and they were immediately dismissed from the group. So they don't want to talk about politics. These people are not politicized. They just want different lives outside Turkey. In the previous migration waves in the 80s and 90s, we saw that most of these people left Turkey because of oppression, because of, you know, authoritarianism, etc., lack of democratic rights, violation of human rights. And they moved out to become a loudspeaker for people who couldn't raise their voice in the home country. Now, the trend is really complex, because there are people like that, and there are others who just don't want to hear anything about Turkey anymore. They want to start new lives. And yeah, I think this is very interesting.
Could you also talk about how this current brain drain, what distinguishes it from previous generations? Because for many decades, Turkey has experienced waves of migration out of the country, really from the 1960s onwards. So obviously the classic case of migrant workers moving to Germany, the Netherlands, etc. in the 60s. That was one wave. Obviously, you know, subsequent waves happened in the 70s. 1980 coup had a huge effect as well, that resulted in the exile of a new generation of politically oppressed people, and, you know, subsequent years as well. How does the current situation compare with those previous generations, those previous waves of migration that Turkey experienced?
Yeah, so I mean, there was migration from Turkey to different parts of the world, especially to Europe before. But migration scholars usually categorize migration flows starting with the 60s with the guest worker agreements, and then comes family reunification, then 70s and 80s political turmoil in Turkey, coups, etc. And we see more and more politically motivated migrants and asylum seekers arriving from Turkey. 90s predominantly Kurds, because the civil war in the Kurdish majority areas in Turkey, you know, compelled people to migrate because of forced deportations and oppression and other things. So each wave could be categorized. Of course, there was no like clear-cut definition, but we could still understand that there was a certain trend each decade. For this one, it's a bit complicated. It's a bit different because we might start the new wave from the Gezi protests or the coup attempt, but this migration wave is more heterogeneous. It includes people from all parts of Turkey's social communities, from Alevites to Kurds, from Turks to Armenians, from seculars to pious people. It's not just people who have a problem with the AKP are moving away. There are people who support the current government, but they still want to migrate because they are constrained with economic limitations, etc. So it's very, very heterogeneous, and it's very hard to label. So is it a politically motivated migration? Yes, because people want to move away from the polarized environment in Turkey for a variety of reasons. But at the same time, if you look at statistics, you know, people come and become entrepreneurs. So what I found fascinating, for example, I went to Montenegro this summer, and it turned into a fieldwork area for me, because the main bazaars, which is full of shops that sell souvenirs, etc., were full of Turkish people. They almost like invaded the whole bazaar. So I conducted some interviews, and I found out that people started finding a business in Montenegro, like entrepreneurs. And I was told that you only needed 5,000 euros to open a business in Montenegro. And then they moved there. Many people, they told me thousands, and they hope that one day Montenegro will become a part of EU, so that they'll be European citizens. So this was like a future investment. So people found ways to build new lives outside outside Turkey and sometimes even like not very common destinations. So golden visas also motivated people to consider Malta and Portugal and Greece. But Portugal is the most one of the most preferred locations now, because some people said it's because of the property. So when you buy a property, you can get the residence permit and there is no language test for citizenship. So it's easier than other countries. Some said that I wanted to move to Portugal because there are not many Turks here. So this also made us understand that some people are leaving not to become a part of this transnational Turkish-Kurdish diaspora, but they are moving away from it all by choosing a destination country which doesn't have sizable Turkish or Kurdish diaspora members. And this is very interesting as well, because the migration theory usually tells us people migrate to places where they have previous networks. And this new highly skilled migrants and young people want to explore new opportunities. They want to dissociate themselves from transnational Turkish or Kurdish communities. Either that's, I found really fascinating and interesting for scholarly purposes.
Now, Erdogan has referred to this issue on a number of occasions in recent years. He sometimes mentions it in speeches. Often in those speeches, you get mixed signals, really. Sometimes he says, you know, doctors actually should leave because, you know, if they're complaining about wages, etc., leave the places open to people who do want to do the job, which was a controversial statement. But then also at other times, he appears to acknowledge that this is a problem and that Turkey should try and attract educated people back. And he tries to tout the government's efforts to do that. And a cynic might also say that there's actually a political benefit for him in these migration waves, because, you know, when you look at polls and studies of this, it's less educated people who more reliably vote for Erdogan. So the cynic might say that he has a personal interest in keeping educated people away, essentially. And also, obviously, the social profile of people who are more likely to try to move away are people who Erdogan already doesn't really like, you know, more secular individuals, perhaps opposition-minded figures. It also kind of suits his view of demography in a way, you know, ridding the country of what he sees as these disloyal individuals who he doesn't really see as part of the authentic nation anyway. So what is the government's stance? Is that cynical view of Erdogan almost having an implicit interest in accelerating some of these trends? Is that fair? How do they view it?
It's hard to generalize on that, but first of all, in the past, driving these political dissidents away might have benefited whatever regime was in power. In today's world, talking about digital revolutions, etc., and diaspora politics as ascending powers in international relations, it is very hard to get rid of dissidents that easily. It's not possible. So people who are, especially if they're activists, you know, journalists, politicians, if they are outside Turkey's borders, their voices are louder. And Turkey might use different tactics to apply transnational repression in some cases, but still these people are more vocal, some of them, when they leave Turkey, like people like Can Dündar, Barbaros Şansal, etc. So I think it's not a remedy for the government to get rid of them. Secondly, highly skilled workers or seculars or highly educated people are leaving Turkey, but they can still vote because Turkey introduced expatriate voting for different reasons, but these people still vote. So they still have a say in the election. So it's not like a complete riddance either. What I think is the main problem here is that the politicians, they do not want to address this slow migration from Turkey, which we called exodus in the book. So it has long-term implications on Turkey's economy, Turkey's political status. So in the short run, it might bring small victories to the ruling party, but in the long run, it will damage Turkey. Maybe they think it's good that, you know, some people become less visible, especially if they are trying to play the game for the domestic audience, getting rid of some people would actually benefit them in the short run. But what's happening here is that young people are leaving, and more young people state that they want to leave at the first opportunity. And the government does not really address this problem. So young people are the future of this country. And if you look at the statistics, you see 60-70% of young people want to leave. So this is more than what you would call the dissident youth, you know. So it's a bigger problem. And I don't think that this is addressed properly.
One of the themes that people have mentioned in connection to this issue of increasing migration flows more broadly, not just from Turkey, but generally, there's just an ever greater number of routes that are available, more pathways, more visibility of paths abroad, either to work or to cross illegally. Communication technology has really shortened the distances, essentially. And, you know, there's increasingly fluid ways of working as well now, of course, and appealing to prospective employers overseas. It seems like this is a kind of broader theme as well. Just incidentally, on this topic, there's been a number of reports of a growing number of Turkish citizens who are actually crossing into Mexico or flying to Mexico and then trying to cross the border into the US. It's kind of surreal to think that there are Turkish citizens who are moving there and using that route, which years ago would not even have been on the agenda. So it seems like these routes are kind of increasing. They're not easy routes, but they are easier than they would have been many years ago. How should we think about that? You know, how the modern world and modern communication techniques and the shrinking of the world essentially has made it easier for people actually to move away, whether they're pushed out or whether they, of their own accord, want to leave. It seems like it's become easier for people to move around. How is that also accelerating the trends that we're talking about of migration away from Turkey?
I think this is an excellent question. And I mean, listening to many people's migration stories, Erd and I came to a point where we said, like, how do these people find these kind of routes to migrate? You know, just 2 days ago, before the coup attempt, they had no idea that they will have a different life. You know, they were just happy with their lives in Turkey, and suddenly they have to move. And they found really interesting ways. For example, you mentioned Mexico-US border. We have also heard stories where people went to Macedonia and Albania, where there's no visa requirement for Turkish citizens. And then they found businesses with very small amount of money. You can, you know, create a business and get residence permit in Macedonia or Albania. They would get their residence permit in Macedonia and Albania, and then they would apply for a Schengen visa as a tourist. And because they have all the documents ready, you know, like salary, pay slips, a business, a reason to come back to Macedonia, etc., they would get the tourist visa. They would go to Germany and they would never come back, and they would ask for asylum there. So this was one way. So Macedonia and Albania were really unconventional routes. There are also other ways, like South Africa. I lived in South Africa for a while for my research project on peace processes. And at that time, this was right after Selahattin Demirtas was arrested in Turkey, and there were many Turks, mostly I think members of Gülen movement, were coming and registering themselves to English language courses, and based on that they were prolonging their visa. So people find interesting ways to stay in their new countries of residence if they are really willing to do so. There are also other ways, not just for politically motivated migrants, but in general, especially for young people. In our digitized world, you know, many people work from home. This fluid ways of working also open doors for many other visa types. So Portugal is really popular, for example, because of the digital nomad visa. So, you know, you can stay in the country for 6 months and you can go somewhere else as long as you pay your tax and, you know, you stay in the country for a while, you can obtain this digital nomad visa. And this gives people flexibility also. And there there is a segment of young people, you know, like highly educated, these white collars who are testing the waters outside. With the digital nomad visas or with entrepreneur visa types, they go to different countries in Europe and elsewhere, and they stay for a couple of months, try to see whether they can survive outside Turkey, and they make decisions or they create this transnational circular life. That's why it's very hard to come up with numbers. Asylum seekers, we can tell because European countries keep statistics, but that's it. I mean, in today's world, it's very hard to gauge how many people left for what reason, because the motivations overlap and the numbers are not that visible.
Is there any particular case that you would like to kind of highlight as like a nice symbolic story of an individual from the book who you would like to maybe mention?
I would just say that each interview was different. For us as researchers, Erde and I, we tried to be as professional as possible during the interviews. But some of the interviews were really heavy with regards to emotions that were transferred by the participants to us. So I remember, for example, crying during my interview with Nazan Üstünda or Meltem Arıkan. I just couldn't help it, you know, I cried with them, and it was so nice to share our feelings in this interview. In some others, it was very professional, so there were all almost like ready-made answers, because some of these people have been interviewed for 100 times by different media outlets, so, you know, they had ready-made answers, so it was really hard to dig deeper. I would also say something about the selection of the interviewees, perhaps. It was so hard to compile this heterogeneous sample for this book. Turkey is really polarized, and Turkey's intelligentsia is also really polarized. So sometimes we would approach people and the first thing they ask would be, so who else is being interviewed? And yeah, I do not want to be involved if you are interviewing Kurds, or I don't want to be involved if you're interviewing Gulenists. So it was so hard to convince people that, you know, what Erde and I are trying to do now is to take a snapshot of Turkey's current exiles. They are not the first, they will not be the last group of people who feel like they're in exile, but this is the current picture, and this current picture is really colorful, it's heterogeneous, so we cannot ignore anyone, otherwise our research will be lacking something. So we also needed to do a lot of trust building communication before the interviews, because nobody trusts each other. So it took us a while to build those relationships. And we are so grateful that they shared whatever they had in their hearts at that time. Talking about exile is not easy. And talking about quote-unquote failures, weaknesses, it's a very hard task. And we are very grateful that people opened up to us, and there's such big names, told us about how they really feel. And they didn't try to create a facade or anything. And what fascinated us was perhaps the question about what they think about Turkey's future, but about their own return as well. So we understood that you cannot make sweeping generalizations again. Some people said they would never return, and some said if the conditions were right, they would return just tomorrow. That's why we see how individual stories really matter and how confluence of factors are really important for such decisions. And what we read in the news is usually just numbers. These people are, you know, reduced to statistics in the end. Maybe not the intelligentsia, but the others. But if we look at it closely, we see a lot of individual lived experiences which tell us stories about Turkey's current situation. It's not just reduced to Erdogan. There are layers and layers and layers of oppression in Turkey's history, which did not start with the AKP. So that's why individual stories are important, and hopefully the book will help the readers to understand this better.
That was Bahar Basar. Many thanks to her for joining for episode 214. Remember, we do need your support to keep Turkey Book Talk going, and you can give that support by joining as a Turkey Book Talk member on Patreon. Membership gets you a 35% discount on all Turkey Ottoman history books published by IB Tourism Bloomsbury, transcripts of every interview, transcripts of the entire archive of interviews, and links via email to articles and other content related to the subject of each episode. For all that, just go to Turkey Book Talk's Patreon account and pledge $3, €3, or £2.50 per episode. Do also rate the podcast or write a positive review wherever you listen. Spread the word, give us a shout out on your own social media accounts. Follow via our website, turkeybooktalk.com, our Twitter or X, Facebook or Instagram accounts, or all of them. Recommend Turkey Book Talk to a friend or a foe. And I always enjoy hearing from listeners, so do send any feedback or abuse to williamjohnarmstrong@gmail.com. Finally, let me once again remind you to check out a friend of Turkey Book Talk, Turkey Recap. Turkey Recap is a weekly email newsletter that brings together all major developments in Turkey over the past 7 days, links to interesting articles, and some excellent puns. They've got a Slack channel for signed up members who want more, and they also publish high quality, original, regular, on the ground reporting. Just go to turkeyrecap.com and follow the links there to subscribe. But until our next episode of Turkey Book Talk in a couple of weeks, thank you very much for listening.